UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
Now for the V Show with Bob Valvano on your sports station, ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
Thanks for being with us here. Maybe this is a good omen because I got up. This is even later than our usual 06 open, as you probably have noticed. But I got up and there's a tire on my car that is flat. And I was, as the old joke goes, good news, it's only flat on the bottom. Ha ha. So I was like, there's a place right around the corner from our house. So the guy looked at it there, and meanwhile, the gears are turning. What do? I'm close to the house. Maybe I can get him to get a ride home. I'll do the show from the house, if I blah, blah, blah. And he looks at it, he says, nothing wrong with your tire. It's just the weather. It's just really, really underinflated. And blows it up and says, you're good to go. And I was like, woo-hoo! I'm thinking, sure, you can't buy one tire. You'd have to buy at least two and probably four. So now I'm looking at $500-$600, and instead he just popped it in there and popped. Oh, there we go. That'll be the mixtape, and got me on my way. And so, other than a few minutes late, maybe that's the sign that it's going to be a good year, because that would be what my brother Jim used to call a double upper, which is an upper after a downer. That's like if you just have your keys the whole time, there's no emotion, but if you've lost them, that's a downer, and then you find them, that's a double upper. You're way more excited about those keys than if they just stayed in your pocket the whole time.
Can you get a triple upper?
You can get a triple downer, because if you found them and then lost them again, you know, like it would be like, as an example, I can't find my keys, downer. Find the keys, yay. Rush to get in my house, put it in the door, and break the key off in the lock. That's a triple downer.
But can you have a triple upper, like when you find your keys, but you also find them in your pocket with $20?
That would be.
So you can have a triple upper.
Sure, I guess.
It's possible.
I don't know. That has so rarely happened. I don't know. That goes like in the record books, like the sports, it starts with the E,
E-Trade.
Elias, the Elias Sports Bureau, look those up. Elias said that's only the ninth triple upper. So we got a little double, so I don't know. Maybe that'll be a good omen. I don't know. We'll see. I was pretty jazzed up about that, pretty fired up about that. And the Knicks are undefeated in the year 2020.
Hey.
How about that?
Handled the, who was it?
Portland Trailblazers, yeah. Who've lost five in a row. So it goes to show, even in the pros, coaching matters. This guy is a lifer. He's a non-name. He's a guy that paid his dues in the G League, and Knicks have won three in a row. But that's not what we want to get into. We want to get into the local stuff here, and I want to get into that, a little bit of a review of the football teams and a kind of a third-of-the-season report card on the basketball teams. And we'll do that, but I think it's wise to have a comment at least about two big national stories. David Stern passes at the age of 77. I had a chance to talk with him a couple of times. We had him on the national show and we interviewed him. I said at the time of in his prime, I thought he was the best commissioner that I had ever seen, and that was really, it took some thought, because Pete Rozelle really took the NFL from a backroom league to a really prominent league. It would be 1 and 1A from those two. If you were here to argue with me, Pete Rozelle, I wouldn't put up much of a fight in argument because he was, I mean, he got the owners, think about it, all these rich, egotistical, do your own thing men to agree to pool their resources, which is how the NFL made it. He got them all to, they have national TV deals, not local TV deals. And, you know, they were concerned about the league. Everybody was, had a mindset of it's good for the league, it's good for us. And, you know, and that's incredibly difficult to do that with rich men like that. Pro football was way behind college football. It was not really on the landscape. And then the late 50s, early 60s came in, and he did a great job. So I've got a tip to say, he, if you had made him your best commissioner, I wouldn't put it too much of a fight. But the difference was, I thought football, you know, college football was really big. In fact, it was one of the major, major sports in this country. It was heavyweight boxing, boxing in general, Major League Baseball, thoroughbred racing, and football, and college football. So all he did was take a sport that was immensely popular and do a good job packaging it on a professional level. David Stern, when he took over the NBA, their NBA Finals games were being shown on tape delay. Think about that. Not only didn't they have a network deal, they weren't even on live. I mean, that is like the lingerie football league kind of level of stuff. I mean, it's just, it's like a niche sport. It wasn't even, and basketball was not, as much as we're nutty about it here, was not perceived the way football was nationally. College football was a far more a prominent game. So that's why I said what Stern did, and he brought the players and the owners together, basically telling them, look, if we don't work together, our league is in deep, deep trouble. They had a serious drug problem, not performance-enhancing drugs, recreational drugs. They kind of came together quietly on that, and the owners and the players got together, and they put together a deal where they included the players pretty dramatically. And the league, you know, you could say, well, he had a break too because he had Larry Bird and Magic Johnson came in at the same time. Maybe. So, you know, that could be as well. But the fact of the matter is you take the situation that's given you and it's like coaching. You take the cards that you're dealt and you see if you can make something significant out of it and maximize it. And I thought he did that. So, but I thought, though, at the end, I thought his confidence and his leadership teetered on arrogance. And I thought that was unfortunate. You know, he really got into a pissing fight with the city of Seattle because they wouldn't. He basically thought he was going to come in and just strong arm them into a new arena, and they said no. And he was like, "Oh yeah, okay, fine. Well, then we're moving the franchise," which was a little petty. You know, that's when you border on bullying. I'm very sensitive to professional bullying for reasons that are not worth getting into here. And so I thought that was teetering on that. That Seattle fan base was loyal and passionate. And they had no reason to lose their franchise other than the city was trying to make a good decision about what to do with, you know, their resources. And I thought that was a little bit of a problem. I also don't think he was quite as progressive in a good way. I know sometimes progressive gets a bad label now, but from business, you got to be progressive in some ways or, you know, you fall behind. I think Adam Silver has been really good in that regard. I think he's doing a really good job of dealing with the reality of situations, the gambling aspect. You know, I'm talking about legal gambling, not the scandal that went on. Stern had a lot of stuff go on that he managed to keep under control. They had a bad drug problem. He had the cheating referee situation, and he managed to put all of that stuff in the rearview mirror and move forward with the league. So I think his legacy is well-deserved. The NBA is right up there right now, to be honest with you. I mean, it's probably the NFL and then the NBA in terms of, well, definitely in professional sports, that's the way it is. There's no question about that. They're a very solid number two. And, you know, their deals are their money. Their deals are making money for owners. Players' contracts are very good. Franchises' values have gone up. That's all you, the commissioner. There seems to be integrity in the league. So I think that he deserves. He will be remembered correctly as a great commissioner. The end of the couple of missteps, you get older, you get crankier, maybe border on arrogant. That was not his those weren't his best moments. But you know, he was very, very, very effective for a very long time. And the league has a lot to owe to him. There's no question about that. As for the other big story, 1956, a guy named Don Larson – Do we have the last call? Did this. Well, I thought we had it ready. It would have been great to segue into that, but why would we have that ready? Here is. Take Bob Wolf, who passed away about a couple of years ago, legendary broadcaster, especially in the New York area, and here was his call in the 1956 World Series.
There comes the pitch. Strike three.
Rather remarkable. I mean, you know, you do that in a World Series, you're playing against a team who can swing the bat a little bit, and that Dodger team had a bunch of guys who were terrific hitters, Hall of Fame caliber hitters. I also don't think that, you know, they, I looked it up because I was going to go on the show today and say, keep in mind, Yankee Stadium was used for New York Giant football games too. And anybody knows from seeing soccer here with the being played with at Slugger Field, it'll tear up the turf a little bit. And why is that significant? Because your perfect game means the guy can't even make an error. I mean, you can't even have a bad bounce, and that infield getting all chewed up. But it's unbelievable how dominant the Yankees were. I just looked this up. The New York Giants started their season. They were the NFL champions, by the way, in 1956. They started that season playing three games on the road because they always wanted to save Yankee Stadium for the World Series because they kind of expected the Yankees with good chance they'd be in it. So the league scheduled their first three games away. And you got to remember, the World Series was over by mid-October back then. So the third game of the NFL season was like October, I don't know, 17th. So by the time they played a home game, October 24th, the baseball season was officially in the books. But I thought that was interesting. They made them play three straight games on the road because I'm sure they were like, well, the Yankees are probably going to be busy. So, but it's quite a remarkable, achievement for a guy that was kind of a journeyman pitcher. He was not ineffective. He just was not ever one of the great pitchers. He came up with a thing, you'll see some guys do it now, a no-wind-up delivery. Rather than, you know, do a big long windup, he basically threw it, just, you know, brought his hands to his chest and stepped to the plate, kind of like you would do if you're playing catch. And I think it took some hitters time to adjust, and he wound up, you know, having a magical day that day. And that vision of Yogi Berra running in his full catcher's garb, who must weigh, you know, another 75 pounds, and jumping into Larson, surprised he didn't wrench, throw Larson's back out. He jumped into his arms. He lit both legs, wrapped his legs around him, and basically looked like he was trying to tackle him. But a great moment, a legendary moment in baseball. It's a check swing if you've not seen the last play. Dale Mitchell, the pinch hitter, obviously he's going to be pinch hitting for the pitcher because if it's a perfect game, you've gone 27 batters, so that's the pitcher up to end the game. And Dale Mitchell came in, and it was a pitch that he check swinged on the outside corner, called strike three, and 90 years old, Don Larson passes away. A remarkable performance. And it's, you know what's interesting? There's a great piece. I think it's a really interesting piece by a very good writer at The Athletic, Joe Posnanski. And you know why I think it's very interesting? Because he was one of those guys, you know, his career, as I said, was not terrible. It wasn't great. It was a pretty good career. But obviously, as soon as people met him, that's all they wanted to talk about. And he never got tired of talking about the game. And you could say, well, you know, that's that figures. I mean, it's one of the great moments. You just want to relive it. But there's also, when you're an athlete who had a long career, you know, there's also a part that, like, well, that's not all I did. You don't want to, like, if a guy makes one shot, you don't just want to talk about the shot, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a guy who had a magical shot that really was kind of a marginal player for the rest of his career. You know, he might say, okay, well, that's my one day in the sun. I'm glad. But he had a long career. He pitched in the major leagues for a long time. He pitched for 15 years in the major leagues. And so you could say, you know, that's the only thing you want to talk about. But the piece made an interesting point, which was a lot of ways people could relate to that more than they could a Roger Maris 61 home runs or a Mickey Mantle winning the Triple Crown, because for one day, you could relate to that. If I caught lightning in a bottle, what could I do at my job? What could I do in my bowling league? What could I do in my rec league? If one day I just caught that magic. And most of us can't relate to a guy hitting 61 home runs, or, you know, Will Chamberlain averaging 50 points a game in the NBA, or, you know, you can't relate to that. But you could think to yourself, what is it about a guy who was, like I said, not terrible, but a guy who could just garner all of whatever his talents were and have one day of perfection. And people could relate to that. And I never thought about that until I read this article. It's true. It is true. I mean, we've all thought about that. You know? I mean, there was a guy, I'll never forget, on Long Island. If the names are irrelevant to you, he was one of a whole series of brothers that were really good players at a school called Southside High School on Long Island. Otis Smith was the oldest. This should make the mixtape, but the next one was a guy named Beaver Smith. Have fun with that. He wound up being a great player at St. John's. And they had a younger brother named Greg. And Greg seemingly got the least amount of respect of...
He was the Cooper Manning,
of
maybe?
All of them, kind of. He was a good player. That meant Cooper Manning, I guess, was a good player.
Yeah, he was.
Had
injuries.
So the last game of the season, they decided they'd already clinched their playoff spot, all those things. So they just decided to basically run everything for Greg. And I think they were mad. I don't think he made all division, all conference, whatever the Long Islands were, all division, whatever it was. He didn't make the first team. So they ran everything for him, and he scored 52 points. And you always wonder if they ever did that for me for just one game. They decided, yep, we're going to run every set for you. We're going to screen for you. Feel free. Don't apologize. You know, you got a shot. Take it. How many do you think you'd hoist up there? How many do you think you could put in the books? My career high as a high school player was 23. I remember that. So I wonder. I don't think I'd get 50. But my point is, and that's different because, in a way, that's convoluted. You know, they'd already clinched a playoff spot. They weren't really playing. This was not contrived. This was a guy pitching a World Series game. And he was perfect. And you just wonder if everything fell into place, not where people were contriving, but what could I do? I think that's why people could relate to it. I never thought about that. But when I read that piece, I realized, yeah, you know what? He's on to something there. It's a little bit relatable. He was Joe Everyman, who had done something that had never been done in the history. His career record in the major leagues was 81-91. I mean, it's not awful for starting pitchers. ERA was 3.78. Yeah, I mean, it's not terrible, not great. He wound up pitching for seven teams in his career, but he also won two World Series and was the World Series MVP in that 1956 series because he pitched the perfect game in Game 5. And that was only the sixth perfect game in the history of baseball and the only no-hitter and perfect game in World Series. That's the only one, by the way, that's ever pitched in the World Series. There have been two no-hitters in most Major League postseason history. Roy Halladay did one in 2010, but that was in one of the playoff rounds. His is still the only World Series one. So it's I thought that was an interesting piece. And in New York, it's a bit of a legendary name. But when you lose somebody who has done something, think about that, in a game that's now gone on since the 19th century and nobody has ever done before nor since what he did, it's certainly noteworthy, Don Larson's passing.
I feel like this is a good way to get the text line engaged, 437-9680, UPS Jobs text line. But I remember this. It was in ESPN Magazine. Which unfortunately is going away. And it was Stuart Scott that wrote it. They had an Ask Stu column, and may he rest in peace. The question, though, was like, Stu, have you ever just been in the zone playing any game? And he mentioned like two times. Once, like in basketball, where he was in a pickup game and I forgot what he dropped. He dropped like 30 points, went like 6 or 7 behind the arc, something like that. And then he mentioned another game where he went like birdie, eagle, birdie playing golf, and just he said I couldn't miss. I just, you know, felt like that, and I feel like that's what
you can relate to,
right?
That. And, imagine doing that on the biggest stage,
right? But I kind of remember everyone has that moment where it's like, man, I was just, even if it was just a beer league
sure.
softball or something, like I had the first game of the Tuesday night league, I had a hat trick every shot, and I'm not a goal scorer. I almost had four. I clanked one off like the crossbar or something like that. I couldn't miss. It was just one of those things. So I kind of feel like, text those in. What was your Don Larsen moment? In life, whether it was, you know, high school, none of us did it on the World Series stage, but everyone had, you know, a couple of those moments where it was just like, man, I was on fire, man. I went 3 for 4, hit a home run. Like, I had friends that could only do that when they had a concussion. It was very weird.
That's scary. But, I had one in basketball, one in soccer. My senior year, we were playing a team on the road, and I remember I shot 9 for 10, and they were playing some sort of a zone where I could keep sneaking to, like, the elbow area and catching it, and I was just like, after I made like the first three, I was like, I don't think I'll miss from here. I went, I'm missing one. So I remember going 9 for 10 in that game. And then the other one, and this is the only time in any sport, any place in my life this has ever happened. I really didn't think there was truth to this until it happened to me. They say sometimes you get so locked in, things look like they move in slow motion. I was like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
I was playing soccer my senior year. Virginia Wesleyan, we were playing one of our rival teams on the road, and a kid, it was a shot that was going, it was a cross, I was moving to my right, the kid headed it back to my left, and I swear to you, everything for about whatever, in real time was probably 2-3 seconds, moved in slow motion. So the ball came off his head, I went to my left, I got my hand on it, I deflected it around the post. I rolled to a stop, and I got up, and all of a sudden life went back to normal speed. And I was like, what the hell was that? That's the only time in any instance in my life that's ever happened. I really would love to know what the hell that is. But it was, I'm telling you, it was as if all the sound went away, everything moved slow, I watched it go off his head. I mean, I could have picked out the seams on the ball. It was like, and there's the ball, and I was like, step, dive, touch. Watch it go around the post, hit the ground, and up, and then noise, and up, and bounce. And I was like, what the hell happened there? That was the only time that's ever happened.
There's something about, there's this theory, because I remember we were discussing it during high school baseball, because there's this one kid, it was like the first time I was going up against like an AAU, like the dude was throwing, Bink, if you're listening, Chris Wani, that kid had some gas. Almost killed me one game I played him
and
against him.
But,
no, that was the time he threw it at me. He was doing what he's supposed to do. I squared up the bunt. He threw it at me, and I
bunted it with the bat perpendicular to the ground.
Jedi
and got it down.
Yeah, moved the runner. Did my job. Pooped my pants too, but yeah, got it down. But it was like the first time I was facing a guy that threw like was hitting like upper 80s, low 90s, and I was like, dude, this is just next level stuff. And there was this, my friend was telling me, there's this like training thing that some guys do that's supposed to slow down the shutter speed. And you're just
really?
Like that. Yeah, it's supposed to.
I wonder if that's what happened.
I don't know if how much there is to that, but it basically just slows down, which I guess actually really speeds up, though. Because in order for it to be going slower in slow motion, basically, you're quickening your senses to it. So
it's fascinating.
I don't know.
I never really believed it before, but I'm telling you, I went through it that one time, and we won on a shutout, 1-0 shutout. It was a big rivalry game, so it was a big deal. So I mean, I don't know, does it have to do with the impact of the moment? I don't know. Anyway, we're getting some in here. When I was 18, I shot a 69 at my home golf course with two eagles. Nice. One of them was a hole in one on a 234 wow. yard par three. That's a good day. See, this is the kind of thing you're talking about, but I don't know, don't apologize for it. I agree. Dropped 21 points in a pickup game to 24. Yeah, 21 of the 24 points. That's a pretty good day at the office. I had one other one, but I don't know if this really counts. It was a summer pickup game, and we were playing with a three-point line because the ABA was big in New York. This, remember, there was no three-point line yet. I was a kid. There was no three-point line. And the game we played to 100, and I had 44. I remember that. But the three-point shot was like about a 15-footer, so it was not quite as dramatic as it sounds. But that's kind of fun. I do remember that. It's kind of sad, you might say, how the hell did you remember how many points you scored? Well, yes, I was keeping track.
How many was it again?
Game to 100, first 100. I scored 44.
That's awesome.
It was fun. But that's not the other two were real competitive stuff. Guy says, 100% happened to me, too, playing goalie and saving a header as well. See, I mean, I don't think guys mean sarcastic, because that's the only time it ever happened. It was the damnedest thing. I still can remember, like, it's just, you know, there's the Harry Lorraine school of memory. The theory is that you remember extraordinary things. Like, I still remember we were taking the train to Madison Square Garden to see a Knick or a Ranger game. See, I don't even remember what game it was, but I remember this. As we were going past the station, we were pulling out of the station, there was a house not more than 500 yards from the station, completely ablaze, like out of a movie, like the frame of the house. You could see the flames. It outlined the house. I mean, it wasn't like a little burn. I was like, holy, I could still see that in my mind, and that is more decades ago than I care to remember. That's his point. You remember extraordinary, unusual things. I went to a lot of Ranger games, a lot of Knick games. So I don't even remember which game it was. But I remember seeing that house on fire. Well, it's the same thing. I remember this play like it was yesterday, because that was the damnedest thing I'd ever gone through. I remember the 9 of 10 also. Come to the elbow.
See, everyone who's ever played anything has had that moment.
The guy says darts. Friend's basement, one turn, three darts, all bullseyes. Boom, Mike.
There you go.
Guy says, taking me to task, the same guy who shot the 69, Paul Tagliabue took the NFL to the top of all pro sports. Maybe, but I'm telling you, though, it's like, I don't know. I guess maybe a good analogy would be a two-man bobsled. I don't know. The guy who's the pilot, yes, he's got to steer it, but you don't win unless you get a good push at the top of the hill.
And the brake man at the back, if he doesn't do his job, everyone dies.
Well, you know, Pete Rozelle was the guy who got it off to a push. Scored 6 goals in 1 game in high school soccer in Tennessee. The only game my family came to see. Wow, that's very cool. I thought when I first read, I thought he said my family, only my family were there. And I was like, oh, but no, the only game your family was at. Your coaching staff should have put them on the payroll. You must come again. Oh, there we go. That'll go in the mixtape. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back, talk about some other things. But we're welcoming your 437-9680, your in the zone moments in commemorating Don Larson's perfect game. What was your perfect day? Could be a rec league game, could be a high school game, could be a college game. What would it be? We'll find out. You know what I wonder about? Will Chamberlain scored those 100 points. I wonder if he would have said he was in the zone, because he averaged 50. And once he got it up to like 70 and 75, that goes in the mixtape, I think they started really throwing the ball to him. You know, they were well ahead. They were playing the Knicks, of course. Of course, you score 100 on the Knicks. You know,
swear, like 80%
of the records have been against the Knicks. I think Roger Maris's 61st home run was against the Knicks, if I'm not mistaken. The thing that was intriguing about that is most people know he was a legendarily bad free throw shooter. Awfully. He tried everything. He shot them underhand. He backed up. He shot them 3 feet. There was a theory because he was so tall, the trajectory of the shot was affected. So they had him shoot, which I thought was bizarre. He's a bad shooter. Let's move him further away. So they made him shoot. He shot to the right of the line, about 3 feet behind the line. I mean, it wasn't like he didn't care. He was just terrible. That day, when he scored the 100 points, he shot 28 of 32. Now, where the hell did that come from? That's 28 of 30. I wonder if you'd asked him, were you just in the zone that day from the free throw line? Or, you know, I don't know. Guy says, I don't remember those positive moments as much as remembering striking out or missing that free throw. That's true. I do remember this. This was just practice, and I've never bowled higher than a 258 or something, other than this one day where I made 11 strikes in a row to start the game. And then the last frame, all I was thinking was, if you don't make a strike, don't make it, because you get it in the pocket at least. And I got a light hit in the pocket, and it didn't carry the 5 and the 8, so it went around the 5 pin, so I shot 298. And a guy who worked with me at the old radio station was a much more avid bowler than I happened to be there. So he witnessed it. So he saw it. So I have a witness.
Was it Mark Hebert?
No. It was a guy who was a board op, Adam. Nice guy. He's been working as a dealer at the boat for a long time. I don't know if he's still there. But so I had a witness. So that was weird. That was very strange. Also, I mean, that I've never, you know, bowled higher than 258 something or whatever it was in that game. Came within one ball of a perfect
most
game.
I ever saw someone live do it. Well, there was a guy who got it like to the, he either hit 300 or got to the last frame. And I think he kind of,
oh, they do it all the time now. If you've done it, I'm not to mock it, but I mean, it used to be a big deal. I was bowling in a league in Maryland when we lived there, when you were born.
Hmm.
And,
I remember that place.
Two weeks in a row, the same guy bowling in the lane next to me bowled 300. 2 weeks in a row, same guy.
Wow.
And people treated it like
Chuck.
People treated it like, attaboy, Tommy. Anyway, but I was like, he just pulled two perfect games. And yeah, he does it all the time. It's like, damn. So,
but there was a in terms of like people like I'm bowling with. My buddy Perkins, the goalie at U of L, my first couple of years there, bowled, I think, 8 straight frames with a strike. And it was getting to the point where, like, we were, you know, not looking at him, you know, because you don't want to, like, jinx him and everything like that. And then, yeah, then he kind of went off the rails. I think he left, like, 3 open frames. But yeah, it was damned impressive. He was a good bowler.
Here's a sad little thing I did. Last year, 2 days ago, I decided, you know, you see all these things, people we lost in this last year. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go and see if I can find people that, this is actually a little emotional for me, but it won't mean anything to you, so I'll try not to make too big a deal of it. But it does lead to my point. I decided to look up people that were like coaches of mine or teachers of mine, because now you can find damn near anybody on the internet. It's unbelievable. I mean, I hate to say it, but type in, you know, the person's name, obituary, and bam. And I looked up a lot of my mother's, for both of my parents are long gone, and I looked up some of their friends. You know, they were a little older when they had me, so some of my friends' parents were younger. Most of my friends' parents are gone too, but some of them are still alive. My neighbor, dear, dear friends of our family, the woman, the mother, they had one daughter who was we became very close, and her mother just passed away at 98. Good run for her. How about that? But the point I'm making is I looked up some coaches, and I always thought, and it's terrible today's lesson, someday I'm going to get back to Long Island and play another round of golf with Harry Curtis. Harry Curtis played in the New York Giants organization. He was my brother's football coach and baseball coach, and it was amazing how we understood the sports. His personalities for both of them were completely different. Completely different. I mean, he would do what probably you couldn't get away with today, but if you came off the field and he wanted your attention, he'd open fist you right in the forehead of the helmet. Bink! But baseball, he was much more, he understood it was a much more low key, but he was a great man. He truly was a great man. Ex-Marine, wonderful guy. We played golf at Bethpage. Bethpage, the golf course there, the black course and the green course, there's 5 color-coded courses there. In order of degree of difficulty, they go from yellow to green to red to blue to black. Black, of course, has now become a legendary one for everybody. But at that time, we knew how tough it was. And the same guy who designed the black designed the green. And the green, I've often said, is the black course light. Because, like, the first hole, if you follow golf, the first hole, you tee off from an elevated tee, down the hill, dog leg right, par 4. The black course, that hole is about, well, at the time I played it, was like 425 yards. They probably made it even longer now for the pros. But the green course was the exact same hole, just 75 yards shorter. So to get it around the bend, you only had to drive it 200 yards instead of 280 yards. So it was a difficult course. We played the green. Harry, on the first hole, missed a 2.5-footer for par, lipped it out. Then proceeded to par the next 17 holes in a row. I played college golf. I've never seen anybody do that. He made 17 consecutive pars. He shot a 1-over. And if he made the damn, and typical, that's what that caller said. You made 17 pars in a row, he's still pissed off till the day he died about the 2.5-footer he missed on 1.
That's fair. Is this the same guy that hit the golf ball back at the people?
Yes.
I love that man.
We were playing, Long Island tends to get crowded, and my dad played golf with him all the time. My dad was the athletic director, and he was his football coach and baseball coach. He really liked Harry a lot. And, sometimes you get backed up at the golf course. That'll make the mixtape too. Sometimes, so you're backed up, and the guy behind them, they were standing there waiting. People were on the green. They were in the fairway standing. They walked. They were all walkers. You never took carts. So they were standing there waiting to hit their shot, and the guy behind them hit into them, and the ball bounced up and rolled like 8 yards past them, and Harry was a terrific player. Didn't say a word to anybody. Didn't say a word to my father, to anybody else. Reached into his golf bag, looked back at the tee, kind of gauged how far it was. grabbed the 4-iron, turned around, hit it back to the guy. And landed like Ronda on the tee box. And then they just went about their business. Nobody said a word. It was like, dude, not your turn.
That's so awesome.
He was
he wasn't trying to kill him. Nope, he was just like,
nope. Hey, just like, not ready for you to hit here, pal. Just turned around, hit back at him. I really adored him. He was great. He was, and I never played football. I didn't play football. And by the time I got along, he retired. But my brother Jim played football and base. He played football for Harry, basketball for my dad, and then baseball for Harry Curtis. So he had three very strong presences in his life. But I'm pretty sure it was football. I think it was football. He was the quarterback. And, yeah, it was football. They won a game on a Saturday. High school football in Long Island's played Saturday afternoons. And they won. Since my dad was the AD, my brother was in his office. He had left some stuff in there, and the phone rang. He picked it up. This guy from Newsday, paper, looking for Coach Curtis. He wanted to get some comments on the game. And my brother said, hang on. Nobody was around. It was just him. And he got back on the phone, lowered his voice. This is Coach Curtis. And he said, really? I want to ask about this game. Quarterback had a game. Oh, Jim was terrific today. He did the whole interview as Harry Curtis and said all these wonderful things about himself. And the paper came out the next day, Sunday, and Harry was like, I never talked to this guy. And Monday called my dad, and they had to call Jim and have, shall we say, a little conversation. And Harry was such a disciplinarian. He was kind of reminds me of Vince Lombardi with Paul Hornung, that, you know, Lombardi was such a disciplinarian but loved Hornung, because even though Hornung was such a free spirit, you know, there's that great story, which many of you have heard. I'll make it brief, but in training camp, he and Max McGee, who was his partner in crime, went out after curfew, and he got back, and he fined him $250, you know, with high level of volume in his voice, and said, you know, next time I catch you guys, it'll be $500. And, of course, that did deter Hornung, and they went out again, and he caught them again, and now he was absolutely apoplectic. And he was like, you guys, you know, it's $500, and if I catch you next time, it would be $750. Of course, and they go one more time. So he catches them a third time, and he says, $750. He said, USOBs, blah, 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 blah. And I'm telling you, the next time, and you got to remember, they weren't making that much money. You go out, it's going to cost you $1,000. And he pauses, and he smiles and says, hell, if you can find something worth sneaking out for $1,000 for, call me, I'll go with you. I mean, so that's what I mean. That's how Harry was with my brother. Let's see, 14 years old, 7-inning game, struck out 13, gave up one hit, and hit two kids in the head. That's nothing to be proud of. Really live fastball that day. That's not cool. Here's a vindication. Here's a drop the mic moment. 8th grade middle school basketball coach never played me. Finally, I started. I went 7-for-8 from 3, 1-of-2 from the line. I quit the next day because baseball and soccer were really my sports. So he went for 22 points and dropped the mic. Said, you whack-a-mole. Let's see. High school JV football. Game went to overtime. Our team scored first. The opposing team got down to the 3-yard line. I made 4 consecutive tackles to keep them from scoring and winning our game. How about that? That's a good one. Yeah, there's a lot of them coming in. Nick, you hit on something here. This is good. The guy says, I've done that boomerang shot a few times too. Not your turn. That's it. Just that simple. Not your turn. Yes, the Texas says, didn't Chamberlain dunk the ball from the free throw line? He did. But you're right, it was outlawed because of him, and by this point it was already outlawed in the NBA. So he didn't shoot 28 for – that's true, though. He was the high jump and long jump champion, I think, in the Big 8. He was, you know, he was a terrific athlete, Chamberlain. People don't realize that. And so he would, early in his career, get a running start and then shoot the free throw like a broad jump. He'd jump from behind the free throw line, and he wouldn't be able to dunk it, but he could get close enough to it. It was almost like a layup, so they had to change that rule. They changed a whole bunch of rules because of him. They changed the rule. You know why the ball can't go over the backboard front to back or back to front? Because of him. Because what they would do there out of bounds play was the guy would get the ball and throw it over the backboard from the back. Chamberlain would stand in front of the basket, just catch it and dunk it. And so they said, nope, ball goes over the backboard front to back or back to front. It's out of play. You can hit the top of the backboard, but you can't go over the backboard. If you take a shot, hits the top, and then drops back in the basket, it counts. But over from front to back or back to front, illegal. All right, now we'll take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll get into some of the football and the basketball and some more of your texts, and we'll have a good old time as another decade gets underway here on. And we had a very nice holiday. I hope yours was nice as well here on ESPN 680 1057.
UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded. Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
Be a part of the show. Text Bobby V on the UPS Jobs text line at 437-9680.
Should be offended at this or flattered by this? Was watching the top 100 bloopers of the decade on YouTube yesterday and saw the guy who, while he was skating while singing O Canada, trips on the rug and continues to sing like nothing happened. Made me think of you guys. That's kind of how our show would go. I think. Safe to say.
Take that as a huge compliment. Yeah, thank you, sir.
Wilt also won the conference championship in the 400 meters. Wow. He was, that's why a lot of the big men in the early days of the NBA were kind of plodding. That's the best way to put it. They developed some skill sets. They could make, hook shots and stuff, but they were not really great athletes. He was a terrific athlete. He really was. A freak of nature. Let's see what else we got going here. Let's get into what transpired. In the interest of full confession, I watched most of the Louisville game and part of the Kentucky football game. I was running around erranding, as it were. And so I saw it, but I listened. I was dialed into it. I had it on, the app on your phone, and I was listening to Tom Leach's call. I would say this. I'll give you a more overview than a specific. How about this play or the targeting call? Or there's one text I will respond to because I think it's interesting. These are two successful football seasons. And it's not because you got the bar set low or don't. I mean, listen, that actually angers me only because it's such a ridiculous argument. You can't arbitrarily decide what success is or not success, but by your own standard. This is a football team that started 2-10 last year on one side, and on the other side was playing a wide receiver at quarterback. I mean, come on. We found out what an extraordinary player he is, but that and they won eight games. They both won eight games, right? They both wound up with eight wins. The fact of the matter is, these are successful seasons and should be very satisfying seasons. For two different reasons. Louisville, and I sent the tweet out and I talked about it before, they were, a laughingstock, frankly, last year. And the discussion this year was they're going to be terrible again. They may not win a conference game. I picked them to win four games, and people said, oh, you're just, you're a homer, you're a honk. That's all we heard about was how four was wildly optimistic. And they win eight. They beat an SEC team to win a bowl game. It's a great season. It's a very extraordinary season. And my comment to Coach Satterfield was, my guess is, and obviously his aspirations and hopes are, he'll have seasons where he wins more games than this. But I don't know if he'll have – this will always rank, I would think, as one of his most satisfying seasons. You heard it in the post-game comments when he talked about how many guys left, how many guys who were eligible to stay here and keep playing here left. And he said, so the guys who stayed, he was very appreciative to them for that, and he was in a situation where they developed a great chemistry. And you could see it, and not just among themselves – but they appreciated him. I think they were spit on for so long by the old administration that they just came on here, and they loved the fact that he was in their corner, and he was behind them, and he believed in them, and you know, and he they returned that loyalty. To do that and to translate it into 8 wins and a bowl victory, an unequivocally successful season. Kentucky gets a bowl win and turns out a guy that, you know, again, kind of like Lamar. I've had so many people write me about Lamar that I'm a Cat fan, but I got to tell you, watching that guy is something extraordinary. I mean, Bowden is ridiculous. I mean, they had everybody and the assistant coaches in the box a lot of times, and the guy still ran for over 200 yards. It's ridiculous. It's just he's an amazing player to watch. There's absolutely no getting around that. And if you can't appreciate his talent, then you're completely blinded by your partisanship, because he is a player for the ages, a brilliant player.
I said this in the midday rush today, me and Patty Ice filling in for Locke. I've never seen a player that picks up yards the way he does. And I'm not comparing him to Lamar, because that's blasphemous, because Lamar is a product in of himself. He's got a cannon. He's got all the Michael Vick on steroids, juking moves and everything like that. But Lynn Bowden, and you know, credit to his offensive line, whatever, but he just glides through like a defense. I mean, there doesn't seem to be a ton of jukes and jives and spins and everything like that. It's frustrating if you're like when I was watching it as a U of L fan, because it seems like, oh, you know, he's going to get stopped here. And he just gets through it. He doesn't break tackles. He doesn't do the contact thing like Benny Snell does, picking up yards after contact. He doesn't spin off of him like Lamar. He just has such vision. He just finds open field and just without breaking stride, just glides through. And it's like, oh, okay, he got through that tackle. And then he'll not just pick up the first down and get 15 yards after it. And it's just, I've never seen a player just, he does that little delay thing that like they kind of do it like Wake Forest. And it just, he just weaves in and out, but I've never seen somebody more effortlessly pick up yards, and I've never seen it's a lot of when I was watching the bowl game, and I was like, you know what, hell, I want all the local teams to win a bowl game. I was cheering for the kid. I was like, wow, he's fun to watch.
I think it's a tribute to his unique skill set, that what you're talking about, that you just said you've never seen, because you could do this with other players, but I don't think they